to start off part four, I am pleased to bring you an interview that I did with actor Rene Moreno, who plays Joseph Ramirez in the series. And you'll get to hear so many interesting things about what it was like to be on the set for 10 months and having to shoot this miniseries. So thank you very much to Rene, and everyone enjoy. Welcome back for another special episode. Today's episode, we will be having a discussion with Rene Moreno, one of the actors of Band of Brothers, a Band of Brothers. He played Joseph Ramirez on 7 episodes of the series. Welcome to the show, Rene.
Thank you so very much. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it that you're willing to take the time to come and talk to us about your experiences.
Amazing.
Yeah. So let's start from the beginning. How did you get cast in this role? Do you remember the story?
Vividly. I was very lucky, to say the least, of course. We all were, right? I went through several, it seemed like months, going in, seeing Meg Lieberman and Angela Terry, getting myself put on tape, reading the roles of Toy, Garnier. All these characters just kept on reading over and over different scenes. Because Joseph Ramirez was not flushed out. He wasn't in any dialogue at that moment. So I just kept on going back, and they kept on sending it back. Then it was all VHS tapes and, you know, maybe some digital recordings, and they would send to London and get sent back, you know, overnights. It seemed like it was like a couple months of just going in and auditioning. And I was working as a handyman, and I was up in an attic, you know, laying down some boards for storage up in an attic. It was really hot. And I get my call from my agent, and she goes, "Hey, Rene, you got it." And I'm like, "Got what?" And she's like, "You got Band of Brothers." And I'm like, "Oh, cool. Awesome." But I didn't know what the what everything was about, you know, what it was all about. I was like, okay, so in my mind, I was thinking maybe I'll go out for, you know, a week or so and come back, and that'd be it. Because that's pretty much what I've been doing for the past, you know, since I moved out to Los Angeles, was, you know, weekly roles here and there, and that was it. And she goes, "No, you're gonna be on set. They need you out there. It's gonna be, you know, roughly 10 months of shooting, and you have to leave on Thursday."
Oh, wow!
And this was on a Wednesday.
Meaning tomorrow, or meaning a week from tomorrow?
Meaning tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I was like, "Hold on, I'm like, okay, wow. All right." She was like, "Could you let me know, like, soon?" I'm like, "Yeah, I need to make a phone call." And I called my fiance at the time. And we had just bought a house, and we are gutting the house because it was pretty bad shape. And we were, you know, getting it ready to so we can move in. And I called her, and I'm like, "Hey, so here's the deal. And they want me to move to London tomorrow, so we can start shooting on Friday, or do a table read on Friday." And she was like, "Why are you asking me?" "Yeah, just say yes, go." "We'll figure this whole house thing out."
Wow.
So that night, we got friends together and had a little party. And the next, on Thursday, I got on the plane and flew to London. I arrived Friday morning. And I had long hair, you know, and all these guys had just gotten back from boot camp.
You weren't part of the boot camp?
I was not part of the boot camp. I was the last American cast from the core group of the Tocoa Boys, basically, which was very funny because I'm walking into this table read, and you have all these guys. You have Garnier, you have Compton, you got Bull, you got Liebka, you got Picante, you got Luz, you got everybody, you know, and they're all just like congratulating each other and just saying, you know, "We did it. We persevered. We got through boot camp." And here I am walking in with this, like, almost like a mullet, you know, with long hair. I'm tired. And I'm like, and everybody just like stops and looks at me, and they're like, who are you? Who the hell are you? You know,
you can say whatever you want. It's fine.
Okay. So I'm like, I'm Rene Moreno. I'm cast as Joseph Ramirez. And they're like, all right. So we all sat down at the table and just did the first table read. And it was just, talk about feeling intimidated, you know. It was quite amazing, quite an amazing experience that first couple of days.
The first table read was just the first part, or it was all 10 parts?
No, it was the first couple episodes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And, because all the other, you know, episodes were being written and they were being worked on at that time. So we shot two episodes concurrently with each other. So we were all just jumping back and forth to, you know, different shows, you know, as we were shooting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did you know from the start how many of the 10 episodes you would be a part of, or it was still a work in progress?
It was a work in progress. No. Like I said, Ramirez was very quiet. Because all of the writers and everybody who did all the work on you know, the background of all these guys, Ramirez was never, he wasn't around, you know. He died in 88, and he really kind of fell off the face of the earth from these guys, because back then, you know, there weren't cell phones, everybody was landlines. It was, you know, and if one person moved to another state or transferred to a different hospital or whatever, they kind of lost track. It was all paper trail, you know, and it was hard to keep track of people unless you were that tight knit, you know.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea of how many episodes I was going to be a part of, you know. So every time I got a script, I'd be like reading through, trying to find my name, you know, Ramirez. And, you know, to my dismay, I was like, oh, he's not there. But
you were in the background for most of the episodes.
Exactly. And that's what made this series truly incredible, is because you see the guys throughout the whole series. You know, it's just not background extras coming and going, well, who's that person? You know, you see the guys, you know, all our speaking roles, and whether we're 100 yards out, you see us and you recognize us. And that's what made this series such an incredible, you know, it was great storytelling, because you saw everybody always there. You know, you saw them work together. You saw them battle together. You saw them always together, you know, whether they were in the forefront speaking or in the background, you know, messing around, you know, making the best of what, you know, situation they were in. Mm-hmm. You know,
of course. Ramirez is only mentioned twice in the book itself.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And shows character, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Actually, with both of those scenes, he definitely does. You know, there's the scene where he's one of the guys who froze and didn't want to jump. And then, you know,
he makes the pilot go back, and he jumps alone.
That's right.
And because he knew that if he didn't jump, he wasn't going to earn his wings, and he would be delegated to, you know, infantry somewhere else. And he wanted to be with his guys that, you know, they trained so hard together. You know, he was like, and to do it alone, and jumping out of a plane alone is so unnatural that to be alone and to jump out of a plane, amazing.
I mean, one of the things that they talk about in the book is the fact that, you know, the fact that he jumped out, that Rod Strode, it took more guts than for a guy to go out on the first jump.
Right. It takes a lot of guts to jump out of a plane.
But like you said, when you're doing it alone, that takes a lot more guts, especially everyone knowing that you didn't want to go the first time.
Exactly.
Right. And then the second story is the whole thing with the pins and the bazooka rounds.
The pins. It's very comical, you know, but it is, you know, when you're in that situation, it's things could go wrong very fast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, how you react after things go wrong. is what makes you either A, live, or B, not live. You know?
Of course. Were you in touch with his family?
I was not. At the time of filming, there was very limited information on Mr. Ramirez.
Even from the vets that were there, like
Yeah, well, the vets that were there, you know, I talked to, you know, Bull, I talked to McClung, I've talked to Martin, and a lot of the vets, Garnier and Babe, of course, and they all said that Ramirez was very quiet,
mm-hmm.
and he was just a good soldier and somebody you wanted on your side at all times. McClung said, yeah, he didn't like what he had to do, but he did it very well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an important quality.
It is a very important quality. So, yeah, I mean, all these guys, they didn't, you know, really want to do what they had to do, but, you know, they did it. They had to do it well. And
right.
There's a legacy, you know.
Right. Okay, so do you appear in all 10 parts, or even though you're only credited for 7?
I filmed the only episode I didn't film that I felt was episode 2, Day of Days. And the rest of the episodes, I knew I was always around, but, you know, editing may be as it was. There's some, you know, I was not in a couple episodes that,
mm-hmm. you know. Right.
During the last points when we filmed in Switzerland, I wasn't supposed to be in Switzerland. And I just got married in my little hiatus. I get a call and they're like, hey, producers want you on set for Switzerland. I'm like, all right.
I turned to my wife. That's a great place for a honeymoon.
Right. I go, they want me to fly out tonight. And she was like, oh, yeah, go for it. We'll make it up somehow. So I left.
Wow.
An extra week, you know, so I went to Switzerland. It was beautiful. There's just a couple scenes I was in with that one.
Right, you know, and you also got to reconnect with the guys that you just spent 10 months with.
Right, exactly. So that was awesome. You know, so then we filmed the last 2 or 3 episodes at that time.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
The Last Patrol was our last episode that we filmed.
They didn't film them in order.
No, they were back and forth. They, like I said, they filmed 2 episodes at a time, and like logistically, you know, Switzerland, and then we came back and we filmed The Last Patrol, and I forgot the other one. It wasn't Why We Fight, but because that was.
You were in The Last Patrol in Point. Number 9, according to IMDb, you were not in. Number 9.
Correct. Why We Fight. Yeah. Right. Was not, not in that one.
Yet. Right. Oh, wow. And so what was it like on the set with all these guys? You know, you're spending all day, you're filming with them, and then, like, were you guys getting together at night, or were you also filming on many nights?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. We always, whether we're filming or not, we all pretty much hung out for the most part. We all called each other by our names. You know, we didn't go by our real names at all during filming at all. So
for a year of your life, you were known as Joe.
I was Joe Ramirez. They all called me Ramirez. Hey, Rami, you know, whatever. Connie, Leap Guy, you know, it's just that's who we were. And that was our identity. That's who we were throughout the whole, you know, filming. So there was never Dexter. It wasn't ever that. It was always Martin, Compton, Nixon, Lewis. You know, it was amazing.
Wow. That is really cool. So what is your favorite scene or episode that you were in?
That I was in?
I mean, if you want to talk about one of your favorite ones that you're not in, that's fine too.
One of my favorite scenes was just rolling over the fence, that little snippet, because we were just filming, mm-hmm. right? And they're like, okay, let's just go through here and just we got to get to, you know, the little cafe over there. And they're like, okay, well, there's this dancer. And Captain Dye was like, don't worry about it. We got it. Ramirez. Just and I'm like, all right, action. I went first, and I didn't know what I was going to do. So I just jumped and rolled that fence, and it was awesome. It was just funny. Just a funny moment, you know?
Oh, wow.
I felt so clunky, and, you know, it was awesome. It was just one of my favorite moments.
Okay. And I mean, based on what we were talking about before with the pins and the bazooka, actually, you know, acting clunky actually makes sense for that character.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, but it was great. And going back to if I ever met any family members, I finally did. I met Joe Ramirez's granddaughter, Sarah Ramirez, through a lot of research from a very dear friend, First Sergeant Maggie Peppers from the All Airborne Battalion. We got to talking, and I had Joe Ramirez's, you know, we had imitation dog tags, but his real numbers on it. And so she started doing some research, and, you know, through a lot of her research, she found Sarah Ramirez, got a hold of her. And my memory's going, I'm telling you. But it was within the past couple years, I was able to meet her and thank her and tell her, you know, everything I could about, you know, the show. And she never really saw the show. And she didn't realize how much of a badass Joe was.
And did she know that he was in Band of Brothers?
No, she was not really aware of that at all. She knew that he was in the military, and that was it. I mean, a lot of these guys never, got back home and you know, touted their, you know, what they did. They just never, they didn't want to relive what they had to do, you know? So, you know, there was a lot of times when we were watching the first couple episodes on Utah Beach where a lot of family members came up to us and they're like, this is the first time they've ever opened up about what they went through. And which is amazing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've talked to some of the relatives, and they all told me that, you know, that some of their fathers or grandfathers were very open about things, and some of them didn't tell them anything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, again, it's a known fact that, you know, a lot of those men carried so much with them for decades because they didn't discuss it with anybody else. But that was the whole purpose of the reunion, so that they could actually go somewhere and let it out and talk to people who understood what they went through.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Wow.
So that was a blessing in my life, and we still communicate with each other. I go down to Tocoa. I've jumped out of a C-47 8 times already.
Were you the first, or you waited to go around the second time?
I'm never going to be at the door. It's not my cup of tea. But I'll be second, or I'll push the stick. I'll be the last one out. But yeah, now trained with the a couple years ago, we're filming a documentary, The Jump, Courage to Normandy. And we trained with the All Airborne Battalion, and they taught us everything we needed to know. And there's 8 of us who jumped out of a plane, and so we could jump out of the plane over Normandy on the 80th anniversary of D-Day. So we did that. Yeah. You know, Alex, who played Mellet, Christian, who played Black, Nolan, Grant, Doug Spain, Garcia, Dukeman, George Khalil. It was such an amazing experience.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way. So you finish filming, you did the 10 months, and then you came back for Switzerland, and then what happens then? I mean, they I'm assuming they invite you guys all to the premiere. Did you have any idea what it would look like when you're watching everything going on the screen? Like, where how much of each of the episodes were you aware of, or were you only aware of the parts that you were in?
There was a lot of times where I was on set watching filming just because it's amazing to watch this epic filming take place. Because at any given time, there was, three or four cameras rolling at the same time, or sometimes even more. And all this was very tangible. There's things that were being blown up and they had to reset things, and it took hours and maybe a couple of days to reset some, buildings being blown up, and we'd have to go back and refilm certain scenes, So all of us on the sets, whenever we were on set, we all always had to be very, very attentive to where explosives were, detonations, squibs, for bullets, where they were being shot, We had to be aware of all of that at any given time. And sometimes we had to be very surprised. And it shows, it was like where the, shots are being taken. So to your question is, I wasn't aware of everything that was being shot at all times because I read the scripts, so I knew the storyline, but how it was shot, I, that's that was it was amazing to watch when it started airing. And yes, we were flown back to Normandy for the premiere, and we saw the first two episodes on Utah Beach. Wow, it was amazing.
Right, because you also get to see it with all the effects and stuff like that that were added
With
afterwards.
every yeah with everything yeah, because there was not a lot of green screen. The only green screen visual effects were, the jumps out of the airplane, C-45, all the flaks, all the tracers and all that, but for the most part everything was, real, so it was quite amazing to see all that and hear the sound effects of, the gunfire, the machine guns. It was, and the franticness, the visceral, just being in that moment, it was just amazing. Because day, I mean, the second episode is just holy, it just puts you right in there, and it's amazing.
Right, I mean that's one of the reasons why it's so amazing to watch it. Especially on the heels of Saving Private Ryan, everyone got to see the advance on the beach in Normandy, and then the idea of okay, now we're going to show you a different perspective of something very similar, of how the airborne dealt with their tasks. In the dark.
In the dark, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you see all these guys working with, the maps, and that was such an important aspect of the war, is knowing the terrain, having it almost memorized, really, and just, working by a little light underneath a tarp, over, making sure that you're going in the right direction.
Right, but I mean, the guys who were in the boot camp were taught all that stuff, weren't they?
Definitely. And Captain Dye and the cadre, they really were incredible. They worked with every single one of us, including myself, who wasn't part of boot camp. I went in and I had to, prove myself to these guys that I was worthy of, wearing, 101st, the Screaming Eagle. So I had to be very, I had to make sure that I paid attention and listened to what was being said, and and just follow my sergeants, my lieutenants, and make sure that I listened. Or else it just would have been kind of like, okay, he's new. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Understandable.
You know?
I mean, I had a discussion a few weeks back with Freddie Joe Farnsworth, who,
he's awesome.
Really is. And the stuff he told me, about how they did the training and all that stuff is just amazing. But to hear from you that they even went and made the extra effort, to help the guys who weren't in the boot camp, with the things on, on the day of filming or whatever it is, just great.
Right. No, it was definitely amazing because there were some times where I was like, okay, kind of lost, and Captain Dye would just say, just make sure that you keep low and you make sure that you follow the guy in front of you. Make sure that, you keep your eyes around. You're always, your head's on a swivel. You gotta, and it was pretty awesome. After, first couple of weeks, it was like, okay, I got this, and all the guys, everybody around me just, helped me along. And I didn't feel like a replacement, okay.
That's important.
Which is awesome. Yeah, definitely.
And the recording, the filming was 10 months straight. Like, did they give you guys breaks along the way to go back home?
There's some times where, I wasn't filming, so I was able to take a couple weeks off or two or three days, and I would just relax, walk around London. Or, there was a time where I had like 9 or 10 days straight, and my girlfriend, who turned out to be my wife at the time, later on, we went out to the Loire Valley in France and just hung out and relaxed. And, being able to fly back and forth to Los Angeles to work on the house, when I had some downtime. So there was a lot of time that we had that we could actually do things for ourselves. But overall, it's like, okay, our commitment is make sure we gotta, don't do anything dumb that, will hurt us, so we can't go back and film, So we.
Okay, without names, was there anybody who wasn't paying it, who wasn't following those instructions and came back with problems? Again, you don't have to mention names, but.
No, I don't think we had an issue. That I recall.
That's great.
I think everybody was very much aware of what we were doing. Captain Dye, when we first started, of course, he said, if you have one shot at this, don't f*** it up. We took it to heart, We definitely took it to heart.
Definitely makes sense. Now, I mean, you've been an actor for decades, and you've been on a lot of TV shows, movies, and stuff like that. And have you ever had this type of experience where, even 25 years later, based on what you told me, you're still in touch with some of the guys that you filmed with 25 years earlier?
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is something that will never be duplicated. In my eyes, I don't think I'll ever have another experience quite like this.
And what do you think is the reason for that?
Because
why is this so different?
We are not, because we're still family. We are still family. We're still reaching out to each other. Somebody has a birthday, we all, try and, say happy birthday. We all get together whenever we can, And with all these other shows that I've been in over the years, I can't really do that. I don't have that connection. I'll have a friend here or there, that I've made over the years in the industry, but not like this.
Right. I mean, from what I heard, the actors have reunions, which is also like unheard of.
Yeah.
It's something that the guys are easy.
Yeah,
to,
no.
We, but, that it's as if you guys took that and moved forward with that also.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 25 years, and I don't think we had one last year. I haven't been able to go in the past 2 or 3 or 4 years, just because I've been out here in Chicago and work and family, and has not really, aligned with the reunions. But I think we're gonna have a 25th reunion coming up soon.
Okay.
Don't know the details yet, but that is definitely in the works.
Yeah.
But no, 25
exactly.
Years.
I mean, how many actors or how many even non-actors can say that they are still in touch with so many people they worked with 25 years earlier? You know, and they only worked with for less than a year. You know, we're not even talking about, you know, somebody who's in a job for 20 years. Okay, so that's a different story. But here, it's a relatively small job for a certain amount of time, and then you move on to the next thing. And everyone moves in different directions. And, you know, it amazes me the stories that I've heard about how, you know, there's so much camaraderie between all the actors who played the Men of Easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Incredible.
I'm jealous from that perspective. Yeah. You know, that you guys have this type of bond after so many years, you know, that type of thing. Have you ever worked again with any of the guys that you worked with, you know, on Band of Brothers? Like, you'd get show up to a set and, you know, you see one of the guys, you're like, hey, yeah.
No, I haven't been as fortunate as other actors who have worked with others. We're doing this documentary from D-Day to Today, mm-hmm. Band of Brothers Legacy, and you know, that has, you know, eight of us who trained at Camp Tocoa and run up Currahee Mountain and jumped out of C-47 and, you know, talk about the experiences that we had in shooting the miniseries and being able to retrace, you know, these steps. So with these eight guys, yeah, we, you know, this is one way we've got together and worked together. But as like a other TV show or whatnot, I haven't had the fortunate pleasure to do that with another actor on the set.
Wow.
On the series.
Have you ever been to any of the Easy reunions over the years?
I've been to 75th. I've been a couple, and it's amazing. The family members, you know, George Luz, and it's just really nice to be able to go back and be able to just say thanks, you know, to the family. And they're very appreciative, you know, just because their family's legacy will, I mean, forever be enshrined, mm-hmm. you know. You know, going back and just, you know, when you watch the series, it doesn't feel dated.
Not at all.
You know, it feels great. It still feels powerful. It still holds up to what mm-hmm. it was 25 years ago.
No, I completely agree with you. And I mean, I've said this many times. I don't think that today they would, if they would have made Band of Brothers, it wouldn't be as powerful now as it was back then because of the way they make things now. Forgetting about the fact that you wouldn't have had the connections to the real men, because, you know, as of now, unfortunately, none of them are still around.
No.
But I'm saying, even putting that to the side, the way that filmmaking is done today and the way that things work in Hollywood, I don't think they would have been able to do something as powerful as they did back then.
Not even close. You're right. Not even close. And they've tried to, you know, even kind of replicate the same kind of feel with like Masters of the Air. But there's something, yeah. you know, it's Band of Brothers is definitely
unique.
a unique piece of cinema. Correct. It really is. 100%. It really is. And I'm so grateful to have been part of it in my little my role, you know, that I had, just because now, you know, people will know who Joseph Ramirez is, and that name will live,
right?
Which is amazing to me. Forever, you know, all these guys, all these names will forever be spoken of, their legacy and what they did for, you know, for the United States, for freedom, for everything will live. Right.
will live on, you know, for democracy. It's totally just amazing.
So yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about A Band of Brothers or your experiences?
Oh, I mean, we could keep going on, but just being blessed and being grateful, you know, I think that's the biggest thing for me is, you know, I'm 56 years old now, you know, and it's amazing to, you know, see, you know, I get to be around a lot of veterans now who served Desert Storm, Afghanistan, younger service individuals who are in 82nd, who are in 101st, who are airborne, and they tell me the same thing. I joined because, you know, Band of Brothers was such an instrumental wow. part of my growing up that I want to emulate what those guys did. And to hear that from service members, from people who have gone to war, who have, you know, participated in deployments and who have seen a lot, you know, to be able to connect with them because of Band of Brothers is truly a blessing, you know. And so for that, I will forever, ever be grateful for all of our service men, women. And every time I see a veteran, I don't care if they're wearing whatever, I say, thank you very much for your service. Thank you for our freedom. Thank you for what you do. And it's just, I'm at a loss of words at times, you know, because, you know, they signed that check, you know, that not guaranteed, but, you know, they put their lives on the line as soon as they sign that line. So how many of us could do that, you know? Yeah, another thing about Joseph, which during the research and all that, and talking with Sarah Ramirez, and she had some stuff that from her grandfather, and she got me these poems he wrote. He wrote some cadences. He was a poet, you know, and it was amazing to read all this incredible things. And he had, you know, he was in Bastogne, and he got, you know, it's just amazing, So, anyways, Joseph Ramirez will always be a part of me, and I'm truly grateful for that. So,
yes, I mean. Definitely. Yeah. It sounds amazing. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. This has been really, really amazing. Hearing the story from one of the men who was a big part of EZ. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ron.